We're now dealing with our new character, Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon. All right, let me give you some background because I'm not sure how much you're familiar with King Solomon. Who was Shlomo HaMelech's dad?
David,
King David. Who was his mom? Who was Shlomo's mom?
Bathsheba.
All right. That was a hard one. Okay. Was Shlomo the first son of David?
No.
No. But yet, David requested that he should be the heir to the throne. Okay. And did all the brothers like that idea? No. There was a rebellion. He actually had to send out somebody to do the out, actually kill his other brother. Okay. It's another story. I recommend you read that. It's the word now, if you want it. That's found in Malachim, in Malachim Aleph, the beginning there. Now, okay. So let's. Is there a temple yet?
Yes.
Is there a Mishkan? Is there a Migdash yet? Not yet. Very good. He's early in his career. Migdash is a temple, and the mobile one is called the Mishkan. So right now there's a Mishkan. Okay. Excellent. He's going to build that. Correct. All right, let's go. Let's read it. I broke it down to a series of scenes, and this is going to bring yet another idea in the world of tefillah, or be able to further expand our conceptions. Let's roll. Scene one. Who'd like to read?
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead. Jen, Bavakasha, please, go ahead.
Scene one. Yam newly appointed King Shlomo. Has a prophecy.
Oh, it's bad English. Has a prophecy. All right, correct my English there.
And Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statues of David his father. Only he sacrificed, placed, and offered in the high places. And the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there. For that was the great high place. 1,000 burnt offerings did Solomon offer upon that altar.
Okay, so right now the Navi is conveying how is Shlomo doing? Righteous dude. Okay? Let's go on.
Scene two. Havisham?
Oh my God, that's a nice little typo there. Havisham. No, that's called Hashem. What happened there? Alright, I do not know. I think there was a
startling request.
Yeah, there was I don't know, one of those finer place. Yeah. Great.
That's how they correct.
The Hashem is now Havisham. Alright, Havisham! Alright, Hashem, startling request. Go on.
In Gibeon the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask what I shall give you."
Okay, stop right here. If you were asked by God to have anything you want, what would you pick? What would you pick? Jen, what would you pick? Anything you want.
Successful chef.
Okay, good. All right. What else? Anybody else? What else would you want? Anything else? If God came to you and says, "Josh, whatever you want. One request." Don't say three more requests. Okay? You know, the old classic genie response there. What would you pick? What would you pick? Anything you want.
I don't know. More time to think. That would be like, I guess fulfillment. I don't know. It would be a very vague thing.
I think you need clarity.
Yeah,
I'm looking for clarity. Okay. All right, what else? Come on, somebody, some straight answers. What do you want?
No more anti-Semitism.
No more anti-Semitism. What do you want?
True happiness.
Okay.
But I don't know how we would survive without anti-Semitism.
Okay, that's a good question. All right, move on. What else do you want? If God, what do you think? I'll make it very easy. I think it's a little bit hard if I ask. What do you think most people would ask for? I'll take it off the burden off of you.
Money.
What? A house?
Ferrari.
Money? Ferrari? What else?
Health.
A penthouse?
Cancer.
Cure for cancer? Okay, what else? What? New socks? No, I don't think so.
Glory.
Honor? Glory?
Better.
Money?
Power?
Respect? Okay. What? Stability? Okay, good. Stability? Alright, maybe you may want to pick long life. Somebody might want to pick that?
That's health.
Health, long life, power, money, glory. Okay, so let's see what Shlomo asked for. Scene 3.
And Solomon said, "You have shown unto your servant David my..."
Go on.
"My father, great kindness, according as he walked before you in truth, and in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with you, and you have kept for him this great kindness that you have given him as a son to sit on his throne, as it is this day. And now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child. I know not how to go out or come in, and your servant is in the midst of your people, which you have chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Give your servant, therefore, an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil, for who is able to judge this your great people?"
Okay. So first of all, notice how he's speaking in sort of a tefillah-esque way. So using our paradigm right here,
bottom up, top down, which one had to express himself?
I mean, he's in a superior place, but...
How does he contextualize the situation?
Top bottom. Isn't he talking about God?
No. What does he say? God, look at it carefully.
It's really a choice.
Bottom
up.
Is he talking bottom? He's talking personal upwards toward a more universal perspective?
Yeah.
What?
People first, and then...
Well, how is he talking about? What's his first topic? Let's take it one thing at a time. "You have shown upon your servant David, my father, great kindness, according as he walked before you in truth, and in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with you. And you have kept for him this great kindness, that you have given him a son to sit on this throne as is today." Where is the camera? Is the camera focusing on him?
No.
He starts from a much broader perspective. What is he looking at? David. And then not, is he talking about David individually, or David being what? The recipient of God's blessing, kindness, and all the things. Kindness, righteous, you know, everything. Why? Because David, so he's taking a top down. So here he first talks about how Hashem, that's a dollar that's God. Hashem related to King David with great kindness. So what is he saying? How did Hashem relate to David? Was that earned? What does kindness mean? What does chesed mean? Giving something to someone that they, by right, do not deserve. Tzedakah is giving somebody their due. It's a person's right is to be able to have food and clothing and shelter. That's a basic human right, which the Torah says, if a Jew comes to you, you need to take care of him. That's tzedakah. That's really called correctness, doing the right thing. Chesed is giving beyond what's due to them. So you're considering not only their basic needs, but you're also being expansive within their psychological needs. You know what I'm saying? It's when you're providing them a rich dessert. You're not just giving them clothes, you're giving them a Armani suit. That would be chesed. You know what I'm saying? Basic clothes, tzedakah. Nice clothes, chesed. You understand that? Basic food, tzedakah. Absolutely awesome food, chesed. You know what I'm saying? You're extending beyond which the person, by their identity, does not meet. So he's saying that the way that Hashem relates to his dad, King David, is what? An act of?
Chesed.
Correct. Okay? And also he walked in, that David was walked with you in truth and with righteousness, upright in his heart. So basically he was a loyal follower of Hashem, right? And as an extension, he gave him a son to sit on his throne. So has he mentioned himself yet?
No.
Then you see how he's going from the top, then he's going down to him. And as an expression of the chesed, you gave my dad a son to sit on the throne. And then, but there's a problem. Now he goes into his request. What is Shlomo's request? What's his problem? What does that mean, doesn't have an understanding? Why not?
He's young.
If you're young, what do you by definition lack?
Intelligence.
Experience. And often judgment. Correct. Both are true.
So he's got a problem. According to the Midrash, Shlomo is around 12 years old. According to the plain text, he's around 18, 20. You know what I mean? I don't know if he's... You know what I'm saying? He's a young guy. He's smart. But as you remember, you know, no matter how smart any one of you guys were, no matter when you're 20 years old, there's just an intrinsic lack. You just can't get around that. You've not been around that much. You don't know how things work, and you're gonna have problems. And what's his problem? He's got a big problem. What's his job?
He's king.
He's king. What? Now here's the little thing. The king. What is a king?
Good ringtone.
All right. The king is what responsibilities?
What? Okay. Specifically, what? Okay. Let's break down the. Let's take out the Jewish king job description. King. What is the basic things?
What's his job?
Everything.
Everything? Well, there's also a Sanhedrin. Does he make legislation?
He's the executor of law and a judge.
Okay, so he is there to he has an extra, what they call an extra juridical power. He can
enforce law. His job is to ensure that he has a lawful society and that people are moving in the ways of the Torah. He is therefore granted extra juridical powers, which means that if somebody does not listen to him from a direct command, what is the punishment for not listening to the command king, the command of the king? He can kill him. He can. That is, he doesn't have to do it. He can do it. Okay. He also is in charge of the army. He's there to file all international relations, whether it be diplomatic or with warfare. He's in charge. Okay. Now, of course, he has people working for him. He's not. You know, he's not the entire State Department. He doesn't do everything in the State Department, but he has a State Department. Okay. So his job is also to run and to do to ensure that he has a just society. In addition, with all the court system, every Jewish town in Israel had to have a basic court. Court of three, at least. Then every district had a larger court, which is a court of 23. What a court of 23 judges do? Anyone know? They can judge what kind of cases. There are, let me show you the case. There is, the first are financial cases, court of three. A court of 23 can do what kind of cases? Capital. And the Supreme Court, we call the Sanhedrin, which is in Jerusalem, which is actually next adjacent to the Migdash. How many people in the Sanhedrin?
71.
Close.
They
are the formulators of the oral law as applied to new situations. Okay? If there's a case which is so difficult that the local authorities can't do, moves up the thing, and then they make the final decision. Majority rules. So if 40 of the you know, whatever it is, rule that this is the halacha, that's the halacha. Okay? So let me just bring it in full circle here. So Shlomo is feeling what? He's feeling anxious that he has responsibility to be the final executor of justice, and he's just a young guy. Okay, so have you ever been put in a situation where you're given a little bit too much responsibility that you're really able to do? You ever had that anxiety of, okay, now you're in charge of that entire division. That is very anxious, because you know that it's gonna, because if things don't go well, you will be blamed and it will be painful.
So imagine you're responsible for the entire Jewish people. All right, and in a world that does not embrace the Jewish people. So if you mess up, what's gonna happen? No Jewish people. So is that all the chips are on the table and they're pushed into the center. So he is a little bit anxious. Right? And rightfully so.
Yes. Each city has a court, and then every province, you know, or you call it district courts. Say they, by the way, the American system is borrowing from the Jewish system, and then you have the Supreme Court, which is the Sanhedrin. And courts of three can do financial disputes. Courts of 23 do capital. And then the decision of the oral law is done by the 71.
Can I say two more things?
Two more questions, quick.
Well, one to comment.
Right, it's always 3, 23, 71, so there's never a tie, correct.
Okay.
Excellent, correct.
So,
this comment here, and now, O Lord, my God, you've made your servant king instead of David, my father. I don't get that.
And now, my Lord, you have made your servant king instead of David, my father, and I'm but a little child. Where is King David now? Where is King David right now?
Dead.
Okay, right. So basically, so this all worked out when you had a guy like King David running the ship, because he was very capable. There's only one problem. I'm not him. How does he even, what's his self-identity? What does he call himself?
A servant.
And also I'm like a little child, a young man. He's seeing himself. How big is he seeing himself?
Not that big.
Okay, let's go on. Scene 4. Let's keep on rocking and rolling. We got 10 minutes.
And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said unto him, because you have asked this thing, and have not asked for yourself long life, neither have you asked riches for yourself, nor have asked the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice. Behold, I have done according to your word. I have given you a wise and an understanding heart, so that there hath been none like you before, neither after you shall any arise like unto you. And I have also given you what that wish you have not asked, but riches and honor, so there hath not been any among the kings like unto you all your days. And if you will walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments as your father David did walk, then I will lengthen your days.
Okay, so what does Hashem say to him?
Got it all now.
He says, because you asked for the right thing, and you didn't ask for riches, and you didn't ask for long life, you didn't ask for all your enemies to be destroyed, you are going to get what? You're going to get wisdom. You're going to be the wisest of all kings. A. And B, you're going to have riches and honor. But one of them he threw out is contingent. You can have the long life only if you are...
He's
going to follow the Torah. He's going to implement the ways of the Torah. If he will, he'll also have a length of years. If he will not, shorten life. Okay? So that's a pretty good deal. Alright? Let's keep on going.
And he awoke, and behold, it was a dream, and came to Jerusalem, and stood before the ark of the covenant of the Lord, and offered up burnt offerings, and offered peace offerings, and made a feast to all his servants.
Great. So he had what we have now, we call a Sudat Hoda'ah, a meal of Thanksgiving. We call now at MG sponsoring the Kiddush, right? Feel good about something, sponsor a Kiddush, right? So he was sponsoring a Kiddush, not for himself, but for the entire Jewish people.
This is a dream, though, right?
He had a prophetic dream. He had a communication. It was not just a wacky dream. This was actually, the dream was a vehicle of communication to him, and it was a reality. Okay, now we get to scene 8. Scene 6, I'm sorry.
Okay. Then came there two women that were harlots unto the king, and stood before him. And the woman said, O my lord, I and this woman dwell in one house, and I was delivered of a child with her in the house. And it came to pass the third day after I was delivered, that this woman was delivered also, and we were together. There was no stranger with us in the house, save we two in the house.
Okay, you're going to get the same thing. So we have two whores in the house. They both had kids. Okay? We got the scene clearly, and nobody's in their house. Business is slow. Let's go on.
And this woman's child died in the night because she overlaid it.
Okay, sadly. So, let's call. I'm going to make this getting a little confusing, so we're going to call Woman A. So, what happened to her baby?
Died.
How?
She
when she had a baby because she was nursing it, in the night she smothered it inadvertently. Very tragic, okay?
And she arose at midnight and took my son from beside me, while your handmaid slept and laid in her bosom, and laid her dead child in my bosom.
Aha! So now we have woman number B. So woman A's baby died. So what did she do?
She did
the old switcheroo. She took the baby, and she went to woman B and carefully took out the live baby. And she put in the dead baby, and she scampered off with the new baby.
Oh, she left.
Right, so now she's in another two rooms. Okay, let's go on. Everybody got that scene? All right, go on. This is good stuff.
And when I rose in the morning to give my child suck, behold, it was dead. And when I had looked well in the morning, behold, it was not my son. When I did hear...
Whom I did bear. So then woman B, call her the victim.
The switcheroo.
I love that word.
Switcheroo. Okay? So she looks up, and she examines the baby very carefully, and what does she realize?
It's not hers.
It ain't hers.
You're right.
Okay?
Nay, the living is my son, and dead. Hold on,
I lost you. 22. Go ahead.
And the other woman said, Nay, but the living is my son, and the dead is your son. And this said, No, but the dead is your son, and the living is my son. Thus they spoke before the king.
All right, so the king has to hear, by the way, rule of Jewish law. Everybody has to express their case fully, okay, their side of the story. Okay, so each one, so basically what are they arguing about?
Who
is the mother of the live baby? They don't care about the dead one. Okay, got that? Let's keep on going.
Then said the king, the one say, this is my son that liveth, and your son is the dead. And the other say, nay, but your son is the dead, and my son is the living.
All right, so he reaffirms their account, okay? Shlomo's response, famous stuff here.
And the king said, fetch me a sword. And they brought a sword before the king. And the king said, divide the living child in two, and give half to the one and half to the other.
Then spoke
the woman, whose the living child was unto the king, for her heart yearned upon her son. And she said, O my lord, give her the living child, and in no wise slay it. But the other said, it shall be neither mine nor thine. Divide it.
Okay, good. So let's figure this out. So the one woman said, so when he was brandishing the sword, so fine, we'll split it. And so one woman said, which is going to be
woman B, correct.
She said, what did she say? What did she say?
Don't hurt her.
Let this woman have the baby. Okay? But interestingly enough, what's the woman A say?
Divide it.
It should be neither mine nor hers. Divide it. What's up with that?
She's jealous.
Well, she's also making...
Hold on. Okay? So then we're going to go into Shlomo's response. But let's work this out. Because basically what's going on here is let's go to the response. And Shlomo said, the king said?
The king answered and said, give her the living child, and no wise slay. She is the mother thereof.
Right. So the woman B,
who said, I'll give her the baby, and this woman who said, no, don't give her the baby, chop it in half, should be neither mine nor hers.
So how did Shlomo know psychologically here what's going on? What is going on? So the best way to approach this is as Howie was getting to. Why did this woman, who woman B says you keep the baby? So why woman B should say okay, I'm done. She just gave up. They came to court to fight over custody over this child, right? And when they brought the sword, woman B said, no, you can keep the baby. So she said okay. So in a certain sense, once woman B said that, she had won the case. Yet she didn't say that. She said no.
Because she knows she'll be proven.
She knows. She said no. Should be neither mine nor yours. Divide it. Why would she say such a thing? What's really going on? Why would a woman say that she wants a kid to be chopped in half?
Because if she can't have her son is gone, she's now going to see this other woman with a child.
Right.
So she just wants them both to be miserable.
Right. Okay. Very cool. Okay. Let's expand upon this. This is how you're saying about the jealous factor. So here's this is what she's thinking here. So. Does she want to raise her? Does she want to raise her friend's baby?
No.
No. I'm using the word friends. Okay. Co harlots, whatever you want to call that. I don't know what a name for that is. All right. Co-worker. That's a good word. Okay. Co-worker. Right. So, but what is the idea? But what is it she's had? But so why should she? But why does? So why does she? Why does she just give the baby back? Why did she say split it? Divide it. What's up with that? All right, Heather?
She doesn't have any real feelings
child. None. So, but what? But she has strong feeling because she wants the baby. Why does she want the baby to be killed? Right. So this is called a scorched earth mentality. In other words, she feels horrible that her baby's dead. And the fact is, and if she's miserable, I mean, now is this rational thinking?
No.
No. But have you met people who get really upset and get really crazy and do stupid things?
Yes.
That's basically all of us, okay, in different times, okay? So the bottom line is, her rationality, which that was basically Shlomo's plan. He wanted to spark, by bringing out the sword, he knew that one person is very aggressive and is very angry, and when a person's emotionally not in control fully, what's going to happen? They're going to show it. They're going to reveal it. The cards are going to be revealed. They're going to be the poker tail is going to happen, and he wanted to really flesh it out. Okay, so then he figured out that the woman who really cares about the kid, she has an intrinsic love of the child, and that she'd rather have the child alive than have a child and the other person raise it than the kid being killed. The other person is just having a jealous, scorched earth. I'm angry about my situation. Why should she be happy? Why should she be there with the child, you know, in the playground? I'm sitting there with my, you know, with no child. If I don't have happiness, no happiness for her. You meet people all this. You meet angry people like this all the time. Okay. So basically, Shlomo played a game. Figured out the situation, and he is able to allow their emotions to come out. Figure out, make the deduction, and approve the paternity without the benefit of DNA. Let's go to the last scene because we got 1 minute left. Go on.
And all of Israel heard the judgment which the king had judged, and they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to do justice.
Okay, so they liked the wisdom, and they were fearful. So they're impressed by the move here because he used psychological insight to be able to figure out the situation here. Why were they fearful of him? Yeah, go ahead. I'll get your question. But why? Let me first question here. Why were they afraid of Shlomo?
Because they couldn't pull it over the king.
That's it. Because they realized, you know, this is like using a Star Wars analogy. He's like a Jedi Master here. He's like 14 chess moves ahead. He understands their psychological inner world, and nobody's going to mess with Shlomo because he got this gift of profound insight and wisdom, and therefore he's going to be the ultimate weasel buster. In a certain sense, when young Shlomo, the king, stepped into the land, a new sheriff head showed up, and that was Shlomo. And that was his request. And again, from a teal perspective, you see how he crafted it from a top down. He saw him being a recipient of not just his individual kindness, but a tradition of kindness that happened starting with his dad. And truthfully going back prior, but that's what he started with. Not just his own little bubble, help me out because I'm feeling like a loser. But rather, he's expanding it and putting it, he's contextualizing the tefillah into the larger providential scope and breadth of history. And that you see, we're going to see it time and time again. Of course, the Siddur is going to be filled with that. Your question, Jen.
Thanks. Back then, how did everybody find out about his judgment? And two, do you think in some ways these two heartless were being punished for being forced? And that's why they had to deal with us.
Okay, a couple things. Number one is they did not have a Twitter feed that they found out in 5 seconds. Eventually it got out because this is cool stuff. First of all, this shows you that look in the Jewish society, even when Shlomo Melech the king, you have the good, the bad, and the ugly. You have a horse. Okay, that's not now the Torah says you should not have a horse. It's a prohibition of the Torah, but it happens. But do they feel? Did Shlomo take an ivory tower approach to justice? Nope. Justice has to be done, even if they're not acting properly. At least in this area, they should not be kidnapping other people's kids, and there should not be murder. So he's engaging with the people. He has no, he's not too above getting his hands dirty and dealing with, shall we say, the lower echelon of the Jewish community, which is the two zonas. Okay. So that really shows you And once that, in such an extreme case, that, you know, stuff like this, it travels. You know, there's the internet, and then there's something which is faster than the internet, which is the yentanet. The yentanet is very fast. You know what I mean? If there is something unusual happen, could be Lashon Hara, could be good news, people find out. And you hear what Shlomo did about with those two zonas? One trying to grab the other baby? You'll never hear about it. You know, it traveled. You know, pretty soon, I don't know, it took a week, 2 weeks, whatever. It made the rounds. So that's the deal here. Alright, so that's essentially what I wanted to do to see another expression of a tefillah perspective here, which is sort of a bottom-up, but articulating from a top-down perspective. And that's really a lot of our tefillah in the Siddur is that perspective. Okay, questions? Okay, good, we're done.